Well, good evening, everybody. We are live again on a Monday night from the Antlers on East Portage Avenue. Bill Crawford, along with the head coach, Damon Witten from Laker Hockey. And evidently, the Lakers played two games up in Alaska over the weekend. Did you win?
Well, you'd have to be a night owl to find out, wouldn't you? But yeah, certainly a big road weekend for sure. And long travel. And it sounds like a lot of people stayed up and listened. So I understand the bags under the eyes, and I know how you feel.
Yeah, I listened to both games all the way through. It wasn't easy. I think that first one didn't get over till about 2:20. But great wins, Damon. I was really happy. 4-2 on the Friday night game, and then 2-0 on Saturday with an empty net goal. And special teams certainly came to the fore in this weekend series. You had four power play goals, including that empty netter, two shorthanded goals. Gage Terrell gets a shorthanded goal late in the second period on Saturday night. That's the game winner. And Gage, by the way, has been named the Rookie of the Week in the WCHA Player of the Week as a rookie. He had a goal and two assists, and he's coming off injury, too. He's had a kind of a tough start to his career at Lake Superior State, but he's been a really good freshman player.
Well, he has, you know, and a couple fluky injuries, really, just in practice with some upper body stuff going on there. And he's not 100%. He's kind of playing through it a little bit and a little bit limited. And, boy, when we get him back fully healthy, he's going to be a very good player. And he already is a very good player. But you know what? He can do everything. He can skate. He's smart. His compete level is very good. His second effort's very good. He's got vision. He can shoot. So we like him a lot. He's been put in a position to be successful. He plays all situations for us. And we're starting to see a little bit more of what Gage, I think, is going to do consistently over his career here.
Yeah, big weekend, too, for Nick Kossoff. He gets thrown into the fray on Saturday night. Gordy got sick in the warm-ups, didn't start the game, and I guess Nick at the last second finds out he's playing. Maybe that's a good thing, find out at the last second you're going to play goal in Division I, and he did a great job. He got his second shutout as a rookie. He was nominated for Defensive Player of the Week. And finished as a runner-up there to Olivier Mantha, the outstanding goaltender from Alaska Anchorage, because Anchorage went in and beat Michigan Tech twice at Tech, which is no easy feat. And Nick Kossoff, big performance. He's going to join us on the show tonight.
Yeah, it'll be great to get him coming off that performance and the start he's had. You know, kind of the background of the whole story is, I think for myself, over the last couple of weeks, you know, we like Nick and we think he's good enough to play, and we've been trying to kind of find him some spots and spot him in. But Gordy's been so good and league points are so important that it's been tough to do, and that's a credit to the way Gordy's been playing. But we kind of targeted the Saturday night in Fairbanks to play Nick, and you know, talking to Coach Barbo before we left town, he thought that was a pretty good plan. And then, you know, you win Friday night and these league points are so important. So as a staff, you know, we kind of went around and talked about it and everything. You know, everybody kind of, the consensus was, hey, we got to stick with Gordy. He's playing so well. League points are so important, so we're going to play Gordy. And so it was a tough conversation with Nick that Saturday morning, because we have been talking to him about, you know, trying to get him back in there at some point. So you go from the emotional low Saturday morning, and, you know, he's a prideful kid. He's a tough kid. He wanted to play. He's probably deserved a little bit more than he's gotten, but again, going to Gordy's play. So you go from a low Saturday morning, and you know, you're just, you know, in the warm-ups, Gordy was doing the number one routine, everything was going fine, and then Nikki comes running off her trainer saying, hey, Gordy just got sick, and he, you know, we don't know if he's going to go. So finally, a couple minutes later, see Gordy, you know, how he's about 80%, and so fine, you know, hey, we'll play Nick. That was the plan the whole time. And so we went in, told Nick about 8 minutes before we're going on the ice. And so the low that morning from not playing to 8 minutes before game time, for him to go in and have that performance is really remarkable. And, you know, a real credit to him and his mental toughness to do that. And like I said, we like him. And I think next time I'm just going to stick with my gut and go with my gut on that. But good for him to show that resolve and to get in there and a huge performance.
Yeah, and it's not like he didn't have anything to do. He made 36 saves in getting that victory on Saturday night. And as we say, he was a nominee for Defensive Player of the Week, just edged out there by Olivier Mantha from Anchorage. But great performance for Nick Kossoff. Good job. Gage Terrell gets the game winner. And then JT Henke adds one into the empty net, which was very nice with about 4 seconds left.
Well, as you mentioned, it was certainly a huge weekend of special teams for the program and for the way it goes. Now, you know, we want more 5-on-5. If we can put our 5-on-5 play and get it all going in one night, we'll be very dangerous. But, you know, Friday night to go 3-for-4 on the power play and get the short end of the goal was tremendous. You know, I thought Alex Golke had a great goal in net front. Owen Hedrick had a great shot in. You know, we talk about Owen all the time and his ability to get pucks to the net. And, you know, not only can he get it there, but it's there's some predictability for our guy. So Al's able to get a good tip on it and a big goal. to get us going that night. Then if nobody's seen the Anthony Nellis' goal, was just a real thing of beauty. Jake Hand had it at our right blue line. He made a seam pass, cross ice, all the way to Josh Hanke at the left, the kind of bottom of the circle. We've talked a ton about Josh Hanke's passing ability. There really was no passing lane, but Diego was net front, and we had two guys collapse on Diego. And Hanke, just an inch or two off the defender's heel, threw it back across the crease. So we're able to switch sides of the ice two times. And a real credit to Nellis. A lot of guys never would have picked up the puck. And I don't think Nellis knew it was coming originally, but he had enough wherewithal to get a stick down, corral it, and put it in before the goalie could slide over. So a real pretty power play goal there. And then the next one was a very similar to the first one. We had good movement up top. Owen Hedrick, all the guys were really involved on it, but Owen finally moved it to Mitch for a one-timer. The rebound dropped to the other side of the net, and Gus Coriale was swooping in to bang it home. So power play was obviously very effective on Friday night.
Yeah, really did a good job. And, you know, it'll make this week, I know you took today off, which is not to be unexpected because of that long trip back. How did things work out on that trip now? Going up must have been okay because everybody was pretty much adapted and ready to play. I think Bruce Cech said that it was 15 degrees below zero on Saturday up there. So it's a little bit different than the 41, 42, 45 we've been having here. How about the adaption there on the trip up?
Yeah, you know what? It was fairly smooth sailing. There's no major hiccups, which was nice. You know, Ned Zimmer might be listening in. We had one little hiccup with Ned in our departure terminal, but we got through that, and we made it up, you know, safely and in pretty good spirits there and everything like that. And I think when we got there, I think it was about 11 o'clock or so Alaska time, so 3 a.m. our time, and we just go right to the hotel. Actually, you know what? We go to the grocery store and pick up some water and just some stuff to try to stay hydrated. But beyond that, right to the hotel and try to get some sleep and let them sleep in. And I thought it worked well because it almost felt like we were right on Alaska time from day one. And then we practiced it Thursday night at 6 p.m. to try to kind of mirror that 7 o'clock start time. So I think the guys, you know, give them a lot of credit for just you know, business as usual. And I think sometimes being so young, they don't know any better. They just go play hockey. And so it was nice that way. But we felt good. I mean, the guys did a good job once again with that. And the trip up, I thought, was pretty easy. Yesterday certainly felt long as we travel home. You know, post game, you kind of take your time at the rink, and we had a meal kind of right at the rink there. And then you head to the airport and you sit around in Alaska for 2 or 3 hours, and you have the red eye flight. You sit in Seattle for 2 or 3 hours, and then you fly to Detroit, and then the long bus ride home. So yesterday got really long. I think it was about an 18-hour travel day. So certainly a well-deserved day off today. You know, we'll look at trying to keep things fresh this week. We've had no bye weeks the first half of the season. I think we're good. I like our shape. We're finishing games strong. We're out shooting teams in the third period. We closed that goal differential in the third period. So I think we're in a good spot. You know, hopefully Gordy was more food poisoning or something along that way that doesn't go through our team right now. It seems like it's contained. But we got good legs, and we want to make sure we're fresh for these last two games.
Yeah, you got Michigan Tech coming in this weekend. I want to talk about them in the second segment of the program here tonight. We do have Nick Kossoff joining us here at about 6:30 tonight. The freshman goaltender will be talking with Nick for 15 minutes or so. And players of the week, again, Gage Terrell from the Lakers, rookie of the week. Also, the other players of the week were Dominic Schein from Northern Michigan University. He had 3 goals on Friday night in a 4-3 victory at Huntsville. He had 5 shots on goal, no goals, and a 1-1 tie. On Saturday, he was offensive player. And then Olivier Mantha with the 2 victories, 62 saves he made in the 2 games at Michigan Tech, and did a good job there in getting Anchorage a couple of wins on the road at a very tough place to win. Lakers right now 6-9-3 overall on the season, 4-3-3 in the WCHA. That's pretty darn good, 4-3-3. It puts us way ahead of where we were last year at this point. And remember last year, we struggled first half and came on in the second half. If we can play well in the second half again this year, we could be in a good position come end of the year. But it's been a good start this season.
Well, not bad. I mean, there's certainly, you look back on some missed opportunities for sure. You know, looking at that Arizona State series, the leads we had late there Friday, and Alabama Huntsville in particular, and WCHA play. So, you know, I think we're a better team than we were then. We've learned a lot. I think we've been in, oh, I don't even know now, 10, 11 one-goal games out of our last 12 or 13. So we've been in a ton of tight hockey games. There's not a lot of any nights really where you can breathe a sigh of relief anywhere on the bench. So I think it's really helped our team develop and come along. I'm not sure we'd be the same team today if we didn't have those games against Huntsville and Arizona State, that heartache and those tough losses. So it has helped us grow and come together and learn a little bit. But so, you know, in WCHA play, where we're sitting in a decent spot, I think there's only 2 teams with less losses than us. So, you know, we like that part of it, and we got a chance to make some hay here before the holidays with this last series.
Well, one of the things is we haven't lost on the road since October the 23rd at Michigan State. We've tied three games and won three games on the road. So we've been road warriors so far, and it's gotten better as the season's worn on.
Yeah, and I don't know if it's a recipe for success. I mean, obviously, you know, to have that much road success, you know, credit to the kids. You know, like I said, sometimes being young, you know, you don't think about those things, or where you just play hockey, and they've done that and done a really good job with that. Now, you know, we got to be better at home, and that's the other flip side of that. And we've lost some opportunities there. I thought the Ferris series, we were much better. You know, that Friday night was a 1-0 game. We gave up one goal, tight game there, and then we stormed back on Saturday to have a nice home win 3-2. So I thought we did take a step with our home play in that weekend, and that's the expectation moving forward to find that best game, whether it's the Bowling Green or the Bemidji or the Northern Michigan, the one home game, and be that every night at home as well. So it's going to be a big, big weekend, and we're excited.
Big ice, any kind of a problem at all? I guess not. 1-2 games played on the big sheet, and you played, if I remember right, pretty darn well at Northern Michigan earlier on that big sheet, too.
Yeah, you know what? This was a little bit better because we had more time. We got the Thursday practice and the Friday pregame skate, so I think that always helps for your guys to adapt a little bit. You know, Doug Holloway was out recruiting, but Rich and I, we kind of remarked Thursday after practice, we're like, boy, our guys are excited. Like, we did some, you know, some defensive work for sure, but also on the offensive side, I think in the offensive zone. And I thought our forwards really, you know, were excited to have that kind of space and room to do some things and to play heavy. And that showed. I thought we were very good with the puck on our sticks down low. We generated a lot of offense on the weekend. You know, Ned's still kind of finishing up some of our stat work, and he was just texting me at 22 grade A's roughly on Saturday night, which is a tremendous amount of grade A's. I think about 8 or 9 came on special teams, both power play and PK, but our guys responded well to it. And, you know, we're a much better skating team this year, and that helps in the big sheet.
Well, Pat O'Neill and Eddie Bishop both did a lot of work here today, and I got a lot of statistical stuff to talk about here tonight. We should probably run through a little bit of it. The last win up in Alaska was November of 2012, on the Saturday night. We won 4-2. We haven't been able to find the last time we swept up there. I think Eddie had it as being 1996 season when we got a sweep up in Alaska when we were in the CCHA with the Nanooks at that time. But it's been a long time since Lake Superior's gone up and won two games in Alaska against either one of those two teams. And that says a lot. That's a good thing. Any other lineup changes on Saturday night other than Bryce Schmidt came in, I think, for Matt Johnson, and the only other change was Kossoff, right?
Yeah, and that there. And, you know, getting back to the sweep, I mean, it's not easy. I mean, just the physical toll. And, you know, I give our guys a lot of credit. And I don't know how many people tuned in and watched. Certainly a lot listened. I don't think the radio can really tell you or show you how physical and tough of a series it was. And the other thing we kind of glossed over on Saturday night, I believe it was, we had about 2.5 or 3 minutes of 4-on-3 or 5-on-3 penalty kill. And you look at Gage Terrell and Mitch Holtz and Diego and Gus Corrielli, our penalty killers were phenomenal all weekend long. And those guys played so many heavy minutes. And then so I was a little concerned about our fatigue level, but I thought we handled it well. Austin McKay's playing his best hockey, and we've been waiting for that. Josh Hanke played with him. Bryce Schmidt went into the tremendous job. So a real credit to our guys for a tough, long weekend. There's a lot of built-in excuses you can use to not have success up there. But, you know, we played and we kept playing, and I really like the response from our team. We like where we're at right now.
Yeah, winning two games up there puts you into sixth place, a tie with Alaska Anchorage with 11 points in the standings right now. That's 4 points fewer than you had all of last year in league play. Power plays up to 17.8% right now. It was 40%, 4-for-10 on the weekend, fourth in the WCHA in power play. Penalty kills at 85.5%. That is second in the WCHA in penalty kill. And we are second to Ferris State in blocked shots this year, 232 total. And that's 12.89 block shots per game. That's pretty good.
Well, special teams, I mean, you know, even comparing to last year in particular, just a huge turnaround. So that's been tremendous. You know, I hate Doug recruiting now because Doug runs our penalty kill for the most part. And so when he's gone, it sets a different kind of stuff on my plate. And, when you trust your assistants, you don't have to worry about it. But when he's not there, it changes it a little bit. And I always get nervous. He does such a good job with it. So. But the habits he's instilled in our penalty killers have been tremendous, and you know, a real credit to him and those guys that we mentioned. Bryce Schmidt gets some time on that as well. Austin McKay, certainly most of our decor is a big part of it, and goaltending is always huge. So the penalty killers have done a tremendous job. You know, and a real credit to Rich Mitro for the power play this weekend. I think his group had, I don't know, three of the four on his group there. And, you know, we kind of each have our own unit and we change things and look at it. And we thought there were some areas we could really take advantage of on the big sheet, the way Fairbanks, they really sit back and they tried to adjust Saturday night and did a better job. But they really are passive on their penalty kill. And we thought with the skill we have on those units, we could take advantage. And Rich did a really good job, you know, coming up with some tweaks and some areas to exploit. And again, the guys go out and execute. So that was very positive.
All right, we're going to take our first break tonight. We want to remind everybody we are at the Antlers, and Chris Sable is not with us tonight, but they do have gift cards, 2-for-1 right now for Christmas. And you can still book a Christmas party here. It's not too late. Just give them a call here at the Antlers. They'll take care of you. They've got special rates right now. And also, New Year's Eve reservations are being accepted. They're going to have prime rib and lobster combos for New Year's Eve. And Santa Saturdays are December the 12th. That's this coming Saturday and the 19th. They'll have a brunch, cookie decorating, pictures with Santa. Bring the kids. Come on down the next two Saturdays here at the Antlers. We're going to take a break on our show. We'll be back. We'll talk about Michigan Tech coming up right after this on 1400 ESPN Radio. All righty, we're back at the Antlers. Second segment of the show tonight. Nick Kossoff's going to join us, the Laker freshman goaltender, in our third segment tonight. We want to remind everybody, too, we've got some things going on this week to try to attract a few fans in. Is this finals week at Lake Superior State right now?
Next week. So
next week.
The guys are wrapping up class. You know what? It's a very busy week, though. Major papers coming due. You know, just wrapping up everything. So it is, it's a stressful, tough week academically leading into finals as well.
Yeah, so this weekend, trying to get some fans out. Santa Claus is going to be on the ice on Friday night. That'll be interesting. And War Memorial Hospital, their personnel from their new oncology unit are going to be guests of the Lakers on Saturday night. And that oncology unit will be playing host to an open house this Tuesday. That'll be 5 till 7 p.m. tomorrow. That'll be at the Cancer Care Center at War Memorial Hospital. That's all brand new. You can stop by tomorrow and check it out. Dr. Arango will begin seeing patients there on January the 4th. Also, Teddy Bear Toss this Saturday night. Bring a stuffed animal with you on Saturday. They're going to sell a limited number for $5 a piece in the lobby of the Norris Center on Saturday. You'll be tossing them on the ice when the Lakers score their first goal Saturday night. And all those toys will be donated to local charities to help kids this Christmas. So a lot of stuff going on. We're trying to always bring more people into the rink for various reasons to see us play. And I think winning is probably the number one thing that's going to bring people into the rink, Damon. And two big wins up in Alaska. This weekend, it'll be a tough test. You're going to get probably a very upset, angry, high-flying Michigan Tech team coming in here. They are probably not too happy after losing two on their home ice to Anchorage.
Well, you know, I know Mel very well, and I can only imagine what their practices are. And, you know, we've talked a lot, too. Obviously, 2 weeks prior, they were coming off Fairbanks trip and coming back home. And, you know, I'd be curious. I was thinking about trying to pick his brain a little bit, but I don't think it'd be very forthcoming in what their preparation was for the week. Yeah, you know, they're going to be upset. They're obviously a very good hockey team, and you know, last year in particular had a phenomenal year, and this year they've been a little bit more up and down. But they're a ranked team going into last weekend. You know, I know their team very well, and they've got some very good players, some very dangerous players. Jamie Phillips, a great goaltender. So we'll get an angry Michigan Tech team, and we'll have our hands full.
Have you had a chance to even look at anything on that series yet, the what the Seawolves did to offset what Michigan Tech does? It looks to me like Olivier Mantha was the big difference. He just played so well.
Actually, I've got to see a ton. Because they played Fairbanks the week before, you know, we were pre-scouting Fairbanks off of the Michigan Tech video. So you get a little bit of double duty there on the Olympic sheet. And then with the long travel day, in today's world, you can download all the video beforehand. So we're able to watch all of Friday's game on the bus ride home yesterday, and we'll finish up Saturday's game probably tonight. So, you know, I've seen quite a bit. And again, like, you know, I know the team well. There's not a ton of changes in terms of their structure from when I was there. So they'll come after you hard. They'll play fast. They want to play an up-and-down game and a skill game. And they've got some guys who can do it in Patan and Hainanen. You know, there's some really good hockey players over there. And in a decor, that's, you know, their difference makers, Mark Ock and Matt Roy, Shane Hanna. They've got some really good defensemen who can hurt you as well.
You know, we mentioned a few minutes ago, too, that the Lakers are second in the WCHA right now in block shots. 232 block shots is a lot, and 260 leads the league. That's Ferris State. And you were telling me off mic here that that's a little bit different game than what we played last season.
Well, it really is. One of Peter Aubrey's philosophies was that he didn't want, and more so defensemen blocking shots. He wanted his goalies to be able to track pucks. Defensemen would vacate the lane and turn and box out and take care of the rebound. So it's been a real flip from that. And obviously as a staff and Doug coming in, we've changed that. We certainly want everybody in shot lanes. Those of you who watch practice know we've done a lot of work of it post practice. Certainly after the Huntsville series where we did a really poor job of blocking shots. So we put an emphasis on it lately. And again, I think our guys just have an ability to do that and get in shot lanes. And it doesn't take skill. It takes some toughness and an ability to sacrifice for your team. And they've done a good job with it. But again, it is different from last year. So I think you're really starting to see some dividends paying off with the change of philosophy and the repping and the habits we do in practice with it.
All right, we got some questions from our fans as we normally do every show here. We give the fans who are with us here at the Antlers a chance to ask the coach questions. We've got a couple questions for Nick Kossoff, who will join us in the second half tonight. But get to some of them here. The fans want to know if this week's practice schedule will be any different than when you return from, say, a series at a Bowling Green or somewhere else down in the lower 48.
Well, it is. I mean, it started today already with a day off due to the travel. Most weeks too, we lift Monday morning and Wednesday mornings in two different groups, due to class schedules and things like that and just timing of it all. So there was no AM lift. There was no practice today. I think the plan, we'll talk a little bit more in the morning as a staff and make sure, but we'll probably put the dressers to a quick 20, 30 minute, just some pace and puck touches, a little bit of a skate to try to kind of sweat it out there. Then they'll go get their lift in. The guys who didn't play both games or didn't travel, they'll stay out, do a little bit of extra work and make sure they're game ready with the full roster available at home. And then they'll go in and get their workout in. And then Wednesday, we'll kind of get back to a normal day. And we'll also take a lot of the feedback from really our captains in particular about how their bodies are feeling and where they're at. And those guys have played a lot of college hockey. They've got good bodies, Division I hockey bodies. So we can trust kind of how they feel. If they're sitting there telling us they're worn down and they're tired, then we might have to scale something back again. I mean, you don't want to listen too much to the guys, but we've got good leadership, and I think they know what we're trying to do and where they're at. So we'll take the pulse of the team a little bit and make sure we're fresh. There's two games left, so there's not too much in practice we need to get in place in terms of our structure and things like that. So it's really just about being fresh for Friday night.
Yeah, what is the schedule right now for this team? You finish these two games this weekend. You got finals next week. You'll probably let guys, I don't know, even know if you would practice that much next week, maybe just to stay a little bit fresh on the skating end of things. You do have a tournament coming up right after Christmas. It's a Tuesday and Wednesday after the Christmas break at Vermont. So you got to be ready for that. How does this all fit together and what's the plan?
Yeah, and I think going into Florida last year, it was important as well to make sure we were ready to play. And I had different coaches had different philosophies. My time in East Lansing with Coach Mason, every Christmas night, we were at Mond practicing for the GLI. And certainly you want your guys to get home and have family. They should get at least 7 days at home. So through finals week, there'll be some workouts with Tyler, just kind of fit around their final schedule. I think guys typically enjoy it to come forget about it for a little bit and get some sweat going and some hard work. I think it helps to refocus and stay fresh. There'll be some captains practices again, probably late in the week. They'll get a couple days off to get through the finals, to get mentally recharged. And then we'll get two or three hard skates in late in the week. And then I believe either Friday or Saturday, they're free to go, which gives them about 7 days off. And then the 26th, we'll meet up and practice in Toronto on our way headed to Vermont.
Yeah, and that'll be interesting. You're going to play Vermont the second game that first day on Tuesday. So that would be the night game around 7, 7:30 at night. And then you play Brown University, which is out of Providence, Rhode Island, the first game on the Wednesday.
Right. Yeah. No. So we don't know a ton about them yet. It's funny you mentioned the long trip home. So we were going over their rosters and their standings and their stats. And guys, there's certainly some players that you've either recruited or certainly watched through the junior ranks. So we don't know much, and that'll be something that Ned will work on hopefully this week or early next week, exchanging some film with them. And then once we wrap up with Michigan Tech, we'll get through a lot of the film and the pre-scout and scouting reports all put together. We'll probably have Doug tackle the Vermont game and Rich handle the Brown game, and each assistant coach will kind of be responsible for one pre-scout, and then we'll make some adjustments. Really, it's going to be about what we do when we get there. There's just not enough time, and holiday hockey sometimes can be a little bit sloppy with everybody coming off the break. So it's more about what we're going to do and what kind of conditioning and shape we're going to be in as we get out there.
Okay, back to the questions from the fans who are with us tonight. How was the 5-on-5 play over the weekend? Well, you know, we didn't need 5-on-5 play to be successful, obviously, but must have been fairly even.
Well, it was good. You know, the big sheet, there's some adjustments, especially the way we play in our defensive zone, but we thought we did a pretty good job overall. Our structure was pretty sound. You know, Saturday night we got a little bit loose and sloppy with pucks that led to some offense for them or some chances. I think we just had the one goal against 5-on-5 all weekend long. So, I mean, we do that. We're in pretty good shape most weekends. So we liked it. You know, our neutral zone our neutral zone defense adjusts very well to the big sheet, and our guys did that no problem. Neutral zone offense, again, we had some opportunities off the transition play that way, and that was positive as well. So, no major issues with our 5-on-5 play going to the big sheet. So I thought our guys did a good job executing that.
Did you do anything different preparing your special teams? Now, you mentioned a few moments ago that because of the Fairbanks team, Alaska does a little bit of a more passive job penalty killing. You did make some adjustments.
Well, yeah, on film and in practice a little bit. So sometimes when you practice, you want your P, you know, you're always in such a rush. So when we do it in practice, there's a lot of guys involved. And typically, or I guess you can go back and forth, but a lot of times you want the penalty killers you're going against in your own team, you want them doing the Lakers penalty kill so that they're getting their experience and their reps in the same times. Last week we did have them a little bit more, go much more passive. We didn't do as much Lake State penalty kill in practice when we're doing that so that we could really get a look at that passive 5 versus 4 and run some different setups and some plays, I guess, against it. So there was a little bit of difference, but in terms of how we went about it and how we got to it, wasn't too much different. I think it was Friday morning up in Alaska. We worked in the breakout in the Olympic sheet, the power play breakouts, where we have every 20 guys go through. But certainly your two main groups are the main reason for that. So not a ton of differences, but again, I think our guys just did a good job of going out and executing a game plan.
All righty. We're going to take our second break tonight. Damon's going to move out. We're going to move Nick Kossoff in. We'll talk with the Laker freshman goaltender, among other things, right after this on ESPN 1400. All righty, we're back for our third segment of the Laker Hockey Show tonight. Want to remind everybody that sports is keynote on ESPN 1400. Tomorrow night, Randy Russin will be playing host to his Hockey North show. That'll be at 5 o'clock right here on this station. And then on Wednesday morning at 8:30, Damon and I will be back with our Laker Hockey Talk program, where we'll definitely be talking a lot about the Michigan Tech series that's coming up this weekend. And then we've got both games on Yes FM this weekend. And, of course, Coach's Corner on Saturday mornings. Dave Watson's got that one. That's on WSOO, another of our Sovereign Communications radio stations. Moving in with us now, as promised, is Nick Kossoff. He's the freshman goaltender for Lake Superior State. And he had 36 saves on Saturday night. And I think the thing that was very interesting in that game, Nick, was that you didn't know till the last second you were going to play. You kind of got, the coach was telling us in the first half of the show tonight, you kind of got bad news Saturday morning. We're going to go with Gordy because he's been winning, and then you find out Gordy's not feeling well. You're going on Saturday night. Did it help you in any way to find out last second you're playing?
I mean, it's always good to find out you're playing. I mean, I was a little disappointed that morning, but I got in the lineup, which is, you know, what I want to do, so it was good that way. I mean, it's tough to see one of your teammates go down with some sickness or something like that, but I mean, it worked out well for me.
Yeah, it's one of the things you and I have talked about that before. You were our guest the last time we had a Get to Know Your Lakers feature between periods, and we talked a little bit about that at that time. The relationship that you have with Gordy Dayfield and with Aaron Davis is very, very good.
Yeah, definitely. It's one of the best goalie relationships I've had in a while. It's very easy to talk to those guys and bounce ideas off each other, so it's been great so far.
Yeah, and going in again, the fans have got questions for us here tonight, too. One of them wants to know, how do you get yourself ready when you don't know till the last possible second that you're going to go into a game like that on Saturday night?
For me, it's just preparing the same way every game. I try to do the same routine for every game just for that exact scenario, and it worked out well for me.
Green socks?
No.
And he wears green socks a lot. That's why I threw that one out there.
They were yellow at one point. I'm not sure what happened.
Yeah, well, he wears the same stuff. Goaltenders generally are kind of a superstitious lot. Do you have any superstitions that you've got to do something the same way all the time in order to feel comfortable?
I wouldn't call them superstitions. I mean, I do the same thing every game, but it's not devastating if I miss something. I mean, I'll still play the same way. So, I mean, I don't really call them superstitions, but I like to get prepared the same way every game.
Yeah, another question from a fan here. Coming off a shutout, what does it do to your play mentally when you come off a – you've had two shutouts now and two of your wins, and it's got to be gratifying to get shutouts, but does it do anything? Does it kind of make you worry a little bit about the next time you go out?
I mean, I don't think it makes you worry at all. I think, if anything, it gives you a little more confidence that you know you can be that good every time you're in the net, so – I think it's a good thing every time you can get a shutout, get that confidence up.
Now, that game on Saturday night, you stopped 36 shots, so obviously you had plenty to do. What do you recall during that game that if you thought about it now, you'd say, wow, that worked out really well for us? Did you get a lot of help from the D? Did you have to make some really big saves in that game?
Actually, our defense I thought was great that game. I didn't really have to come up that big that many times. I mean, I remember one play puck went off my blocker and was kind of rolling behind me, and Spratty came in and was talking to me, helped me out, pushed it back underneath me, and that was a huge play. Could have been a game changer, but Spratty helped me out there.
Yeah, Spratty's played pretty darn well, Pete Spratty, since getting into the lineup too. It's getting tough to get into the lineup right now. We've kind of solidified things. I think the same six defensemen have played about six games in a row now.
Yeah, I mean, when everyone's playing that well, it's tough to kind of make a switch, and that's a great thing for the team. Everyone's that competitive, so, I mean, it's great for us that, I mean, everyone's playing well like that.
Okay, I just got a text message, too, from our old buddy Mike Boucher, who worked color with us last year on our broadcast, and he wants to know, this is a good question, too, I didn't think of this. Yeah, ask Nick if it's any different playing at the Carlson Center than it is playing at the Dipper.
I don't know that it's that much different. I mean, everywhere you go, the ice is going to be a little bit different. But, I mean, I enjoyed it out there, and I think every game's kind of the same for me.
Yeah, I think he's talking about big ice surface compared to the Dipper being the NHL-size rink up there, and both those arenas are pretty famous up in Fairbanks, Alaska. What is it? Is there a difficulty at all for a goaltender playing on a bigger ice, the Olympic ice sheet, like at Northern and at the Carlson Center as opposed to the North Center?
I mean, the angles are a little bit different, but for me, it's not that big of an adjustment because last year our home ice was Olympic ice, so I'm pretty used to that. And then growing up, I've always played on NHL ice, so I mean, I've kind of got both worlds there, so I was used to it.
Now, you're a young man out of, in the Des Moines, Iowa area. That's where you're from, but you played junior hockey in Pennsylvania last year. We saw you here when you played against the Eagles at Puller Stadium a couple of different times. What's it been like for you, the adjustment coming to Division I so far this season?
Everything's been quite a bit quicker. I mean, the plays happen at a much faster pace, so that's kind of been the main adjustment for me. But in terms of everything else, I mean, I feel the shots are pretty similar. The releases are a little quicker, so that's been an adjustment. But those are the two main things it's been for me.
Now, what are you doing academically? What are you majoring in, and how are things going for you there?
I'm majoring in exercise science, and right now it's mostly gen ed classes for me, so going pretty well. I have a 4.0 right now, so I'll do my best to keep that up.
Yeah, that sounds good. You got another... Are there any worries right now, or are there any concerns, not worries so much, but concerns? It's finals week next week. You're winding it down right now academically, like all students are, but you've still got that pressure of hockey. You got Michigan Tech this weekend. Does that present any extra problems for you?
I don't think there's really any problems with it. I've had to do it in high school and everything, so it's not anything that new. I mean, probably try to focus more on hockey this week and then finals the next week, so it'll be good.
Yeah, and for you now, most junior hockey players have been out of high school for a while when they start playing D1. Is that your situation too?
I was only out of high school for a year, so it wasn't too much of a change. But, I mean, getting back into it the first few weeks was a little tough, but after that it was fine.
Yeah, it's difficult when you got to go back to school when you've been kind of sitting around the billet's house all for a couple
yeah,
of years.
A little bit.
Now, what was it like for you in junior hockey? Did you enjoy your time out in Pennsylvania? Was it good?
Yeah, I loved it. I mean, I've never really been a part of something that's just hockey, and it was something I really liked and something I want to do in the future, you know, with pro hockey, just focusing on hockey.
And how's it been here with regard? You talked about your relationship with your fellow goaltenders. How about the rest of the guys on this team, the seniors, the juniors, and then all these freshmen? You got a bunch of fellow freshmen on this team.
Yeah, I mean, it's a very tight-knit group. I thought maybe there'd be a little bit of clicks or something like that with the age range being so different, but everyone actually gets along really well, and it's a very tight group.
How'd the Movember initiative go? Who won the beard contest?
I never really heard who actually won. I like to think it was me, but I don't know if that's true.
we'll check with the coach and see if he knows. I think McCardle thought he had it pretty much wrapped up.
He did have a nice, I don't even know what you call it when he shaved, but it did look interesting.
Yeah, and the guys have shaved since that happened. Well, it's good. That was all to raise money for men's health issues, and that's a good thing. And we got a teddy bear toss this weekend. I think we'll see Nick Kossoff a little bit this weekend too, and good luck.
Thank you.
All right, great for joining us here. We thank you, and we'll be right back with more on ESPN 1400. All right, our fourth segment of the show tonight, live from the Antlers. Bill Crawford, along with the head coach of the Lakers, Damon Whitten, moving back in. And who did take the top prize in the Movember thing?
Well, I think you did hit it, Matt McCardle. And I think it was about, you know, $700 or so that will go to the Ciotti family to help with them with their medical bills. So it was a nice initiative done by our players.
Did they all shave?
Not quite, you know, and I've been, usually I'd be all over them, but, you know, with the on-ice plays pretty good, so we might see some interesting facial hair over the course of the season if we keep winning.
Yeah, that's good stuff. You know, I want to talk a little bit tonight about this initiative that's been put forth by the Big Ten that's going to the NCAA. They've got it now. It's to bring down the age limit to make a 20-year-old freshman be the limit. No longer can you have 21-year-old freshmen if this thing passes. I was looking today. Pat O'Neill did a great job. He went through all the Division I teams playing the game, and it's very interesting when you look at it. You can see why the Big Ten, they've got all the top 18-year-old players. There are 36 18-year-old players in Division I. That's it. And Owen Hedrick of the Lakers, who's our 18-year-old player, he is the only 18-year-old freshman in the WCHA. So the WCHA, obviously, Atlantic Hockey's the same way. They've got one kid from Canisius that's 18 years old. There are plenty of them playing in the Big Ten. There are about 12 or 13 first-year players who are 18 years old, and four of them play at the University of Michigan, three of them play at Minnesota, three of them play at Wisconsin, one of them at Michigan State. So, you know, it's easy to see why they're pushing this initiative. They don't want to have their young guys playing against 21-year-old freshmen who are 24 by the time they're done playing. But it's certainly a way for the Lake Superior States and the Canisiuses and the Alabama Huntsvilles to compete, to bring in some older guys. And yet we could survive if we had to have 20-year-old freshmen. I think we've got a number of those on our roster too, and we could probably make that adjustment and be all right. My question is, why are we doing this?
Well, that'll be the interesting part, because, you know, it's out of our hands at this point. It's up to administrators, and as we all know, there's not a lot of Division I schools that have hockey programs. It's a very small sport with only 60 programs and not well represented. So you're going to have some administrators that have no idea in hockey and the challenges with the OHL and the Western Hockey League, you know, junior hockey, all these things that are making decisions on it, pushed through by a few schools in college hockey when the body overwhelmingly is against it. If you go, I believe in College Hockey News, there's a question and answer with Don Lucci on it. And Don straight out says, you know, why shouldn't I look out the best interest of my own program? And that's essentially all it is it's just those schools that, you know, they don't want to travel and play at our place. They want four home games or only home games. They want to work on trying to get the NCAA in their host buildings again and insert certain limits and attendance and things like that. If you can host NCAA events if it goes away from neutral sites, and now they want to cut down a recruiting pool as well. So it's a self-serving move for sure on their part, and we hope it doesn't pass. You know, the healthy thing is college hockey has the best graduation rate of any NCAA sport. You know, we're producing more and more NHLers than ever before, and it's such a good spot for our sport. And things are so good, and then you got a small group trying to look out for their own self-interest. So we hope it doesn't pass, and it will be interesting though to see what happens.
Yeah, we're not sure yet if this is going to be dealt with at the NCAA convention in January. I've seen some stories that say it's going to be April before we know. Well, you know, you'd think they'd deal with that if it's NCAA in January. That's when they have their annual meeting, but we'll see what happens with it. It'll certainly have an effect in the future. You look at a kid, for instance, just right off the top, Pete Spratty. He would probably not be playing college hockey under these new rules because nobody'd recruit him to come in at the age of 21 unless he came in when he was 20.
Well, like you said, we would adjust and it would push everything up, and it'd be fine and we move on. But it works really well. As we said, these kids come in more mature. They come in physically ready. They're going to pro hockey. They're graduating. I mean, it's been such – college hockey is doing so well in so many facets that it's not a change that is needed. And, again, we have a lot of different challenges with the OHL and Major Junior. It would really, I think, devastate junior hockey and really, drastically affect, the North American Hockey League, the USHL, the BCHL. All these leagues would really, be in for some interesting changes that way. So there'd be a huge ripple effect. But – like you said, you make adjustments, whatever it is, there'd be probably some maybe a few positives and a lot of negatives, but we'd all try to weed through it and come out and use the rules to your advantage once, whenever they're changed or if they're changed.
All right. We'll check into that a little bit more as the season wears on. Every week on this show, we ask about injuries, the injury report this week. As far as I know, Eric Draplux, our only player who's really still in a situation where he cannot be in the lineup.
Yeah, and obviously, he didn't travel with us with the injury, so we'll get a read today or tomorrow, I guess, and see where he's at. There's a slight chance he's getting closer, but he's a guy that still would probably be a little bit out there. Besides that, everybody else should be ready to go here. With the Gordie Dayfield illness, you just hope that's contained. It was more of a food issue or something like that versus something that's going to ripple through our team. I remember Ferris last year, the last weekend. We could barely put a lineup on the ice, and the whole bench was down and out. So that was a difficult, finish of the season there. And again, I think we're okay. The guys traveling back, they were certainly tired, but it didn't seem like there's anything going on through the team.
Yeah, what time did you finally get back to Sault Ste. Marie last night?
We got to the rink about 10 o'clock. And, wow. Like I said, we left, the night before, and I guess it'd be about 3 a.m. Time. So I don't know. It's a long travel day, but 10 p.m. we got in, and that's why certainly the day off today, I think, was important, just physically, mentally, to give the guys a break and try to flush the system a little bit.
Yeah, that's tough. That's very, very difficult, that long trip up to Alaska. And you're going to make it again. You got to go to Anchorage here in, February?
Yeah, February. So, yeah, again, we got a couple bye weeks in the second half. So we'll look to, certainly make up some days and make sure we're rested that second half as well. So, we try to – to be nimble and get a feel for our team and make sure they're getting what they need. Obviously, you want to have good conditioning level, and it's about March and finishing more so than it is right now. But it's important that you make the adjustments you need to through the team.
Yeah, and you mentioned that you actually stopped. You got on a bus there up in Alaska when you finally arrived there. It's middle of the night, and you're finding a place to get some water so you can take care of this.
Well, yeah, and dehydration as you fly is so high. So that was the first thing. We just popped in and grabbed a couple of cases of water, guys grabbed a few snacks there, but it was basically right to the hotel, and they were tired. And kids are a little bit easier, they you look back even on the first bus ride down, we're 40 minutes just at the bridge or whatever, and you look back and half the team's already sleeping, so they get their rest, and they're not too bad off, but hopefully we'll be ready and recovered. And again, we're just worried about 7:37 Friday night at this point, and when that puck drops, we want to be ready to play.
Well, listeners always want to know about recruiting, and that's something that's always ongoing. We talk about it all the time. We did have a number of players who signed national letters of intent in November. We've talked about that. We've named those names. If we want to do that again, we can do it. But my question would be, without naming names, because we can't, do we have any commitments for the future from young men who just have made a verbal commitment at this point?
There are those out there. I think most of those that are, people follow it closely. It's on the website, so you can find it on the verbal trackers there. So those are out there a little bit. You know, we're close on one or two others. We've got a, again, because we're so young with the 18 underclassmen, we're a couple of years out on most things there. And you know, you look at our decor with all the young, what is it, four sophomores, two freshmen, and I think three committed, if I'm right on that. You know, you can obviously visualize a lineup and understand that we're going to look at 99, 2000 birth year, something like that is kind of where we're at up next, unless there's a surprise. You know, somebody leaves like Jason Bird, and you got to look at replacing him. So so we're a little ways out on most of that. We've had a couple of guys up in town, and, you know, you try to make sure you're comfortable. Like, we don't want guys – some schools, what you know, we call putting a gun to their head. You know, you got to make a decision on it. And we want kids who want to be here and not pressured to be here, that it's the right fit for them. And it's a huge decision. At the same time, you know, you can't let an offer just sit out there forever and then, you know, use it to be shopped around or things like that. So we want to give them the appropriate time to make the right decision with advisors and parents and things like that. And but we are probably coming up to a point where we can have a couple of kids make the decisions, and hopefully they'll be Lakers.
You know, we talked to Nick Kossoff a little bit about this too. These defensive pairings, I think it's been the same for about six or seven games now, and they've done a good job. It's getting hard to get in the lineup. Same thing up front. Bryce Schmidt managed to squeak in there on Saturday night, and that meant Matt Johnson went out of the lineup. Those are two pretty good players. It's getting tough to get in this lineup.
Well, it is. You know, Ryan Renz is a guy who played, I think, almost every game his freshman year, and we know he can play. We know he can play at this level. He's a good player. He can help our team win. But we've looked at, you know, how good we've been 5-on-5 defensively the last, you know, 8-10 games, whatever it is, and those D pairings have been a big piece of that. So, you know, you want to put fresh legs in. You want to get guys playing time. But he's a guy that we just really haven't felt like anybody deserves to come out. And, you know, even though I want to play him, it's been tougher. And again, our staff all has input on that. Up front, same thing. You know, there's other guys, you know, obviously when you travel, you only have the 22 guys, so there's not many decisions made that way. But for this weekend, it gets a lot tougher. We've got guys who can play, who have shown that. At the same time, you know, you're winning hockey games. And there's some guys that have probably become somewhat untouchable. You know, they've built some money in the bank this year where they're going to stay in for a while here. And, you know, talking to some of those guys who've been a little bit more bubbling in and out, now you get to a point where you're looking at, well, hey, this guy's a power play specialist, or this guy's a penalty kill specialist, or this guy's a face-off specialist. And you got to be careful, you know, how you make some of those moves, because those things are so important and so valuable. So, you know, we certainly have developed some deep pairings and some chemistry, some lines with some chemistry and things like that. So, you know, it is getting tougher. We're playing well. We've put a pretty good string together here. And, you know, there's some things that have been solidified in some areas.
Yeah, we mentioned, too, the freshmen on this team. And, of course, there are a lot of freshmen, so it would figure it goes this way. But they've been pretty good players for us. They've been some of our leadership people. They scored 4 of your 6 goals on the weekend. One of them's named Rookie of the Week, Gage Terrell, for this past week as a Player of the Week. And the freshmen on the Lakers are leading the WCHA in combined goals with 19 and assists with 33. So they are leading that class. They're the top freshman class in all of the WCHA, and they are 5th in the nation as a freshman class. That's pretty good.
Yeah, well, and, you know, it is, and they're good players. You know, I think they've come in and shown what they can do, and they've earned it. And at the same time, they've also – you know, because of some of the transition, because of the lack of upperclassmen, they've gotten opportunities that they probably don't get some other places. And but they also knew that through the recruiting process. You know, that was how we approached them, and how you're able to do some of that. And again, you know, when I look back at my time at Michigan Tech, you know, Alex Patan is one of their best players right now, and he's over 100 points in his career. And part of that, in our first recruiting class, Alex Patan, you know, knew he had a good chance to come in here and play a top six type of role. And things like that. So, you know, credit to those guys. They've done a very good job, and, you know, we like them. I think Jake Cann's a guy that we're still kind of waiting for that first goal. I think he's played his best hockey here lately. He's starting to kind of play the way we thought he could and know he can. You know, Gage Terrell's going. Anthony Nellis is going. He's crept his way right up there. So it's a good group. Mitch Holtz, you know, if Mitch Holtz could stop hitting the post, he might have 10, 15 goals. I mean, yeah. He's hit more posts. He had 2 or 3 more this weekend. He had a power play where it dribbled behind the goalie. Their defenseman grabbed it and took it off the goal line. So, you know, Mitch could have 5, 6 more very easily, and then really like 10 more that he's hit so many posts. It's got to be 6, 7 at least this year. So they've done a good job, and it's a good group, but it's a team effort. It's not a class or an individual.
Yeah, I was surprised, too. I looked at the stats today on faceoffs. We've been really good most of the season on faceoffs in games, but we lost more faceoffs than we won on the weekend up in Alaska, and we still win two games. That's pretty darn good too. I think we had one player, Austin McKay, was 8-15, 8 wins, 15 losses in the faceoff circle in the 4-2 win. 2-0 win, probably our top guy, was Diego Cuglietta, 7-17. And we dropped off the map there a little bit. We've been really good at faceoffs this year.
Well, and I think ours were a little bit different. Friday, we were better than what the stat crew there has them. I mean, we look at them a little bit differently. Like, they might go behind their center, but we have a retrieval because of our faceoff routes that we run. So our numbers were a little bit different than they were. But for some reason, our Friday nights have been really good, and then we come back Saturday and drop off. And it held true this weekend as well, I think. I don't know why that is, if the other team's cheating more or, what it is. I know one weekend Mitch got, suspended, so we lost one of our top guys there, but Mitch had a tough weekend in the faceoff circle this weekend. So we want to be more consistent there, but our Friday nights, we've been dominant a lot of nights, and then they kind of creep back and do a better job Saturday.
Well, and another really good thing out of the weekend, besides two victories, maybe shortcoming here and there, but no major penalties this weekend, and that was kind of nice to see too.
Well, and still too many though, Bill. I mean, you're right, and I thought they really had, two chances where you're thinking like, oh boy, here we go. And if anybody watched, Zach Pry, one of their sophomore defensemen, is a big kid, went down and had to be carried off the ice, and him and Nenadal kind of collided away from the puck, and I don't know, I hope Fry's all right. Obviously, it didn't look like much, so we were surprised he was down as long as he was and had to get helped off the ice, so hopefully he's okay, but you're just sitting there holding your breath a little bit. Josh already has one or two and didn't try to do it, and then Mitch Holtz had another huge hit coming back into our zone. Again, I didn't think the first one was a penalty, and it was a huge hit on Chad McDonald at Ferris where Chad hit his head on the ice. Again, this kid stayed down. I think it was more of a situation where he knocked the wind out of him, but it was a heavy, big hit. It was a physical series, but we took too many penalties. We had the 4-on-3 for about 20, 30 seconds, took two more penalties off of that. We ended up being 5-on-3 for like a minute 40. We've got to do a better job that way, and part of it, we got to learn and adapt to the refs. I thought Friday night was the first two periods was good. It was a hockey game. They were playing. There was no calls. And then third period, all of a sudden, everything's called. And then, our guys get frustrated because they don't know what to expect, the consistency sometimes. But we've got to adjust and do a better job that way.
All right. Well, we'll see what happens this weekend. Michigan Tech coming into town. We're out of time again. This show kind of flies by every Monday night. Damon, thanks for being here.
Yeah, thank you very much, and we're excited to be home and look forward to seeing everybody Friday night.
All right, Friday and Saturday, Michigan Tech in town. We'll have the games for you on Yes FM here, and that takes care of another Laker hockey show. Thanks to all the fans for being here tonight, and the Lakers' couple victories on the weekend, moving up in the standings, and we'll have more for you next week on ESPN 1400.